I hope this title slide didn't throw anybody off here. This talk is actually going to be in English. No? You guys thought this was going to be in German? Well, I don't know any German. I'm sorry. Actually, about the most I knew about Germany before I came into Germany, because this is my first time, was there's this little town called Leavenworth in close to where I live in Seattle, Washington, which is called Leavenworth. And they have this Bavarian-style town that does a pretty good job of making it look like it's German when actually it's not. And they serve all the traditional German cuisine. And again, it's not really German. It's all a facade. It's a beautiful town that's in between some mountains. It looks really nice. So we're going to be talking about the progress of web apps. So can anyone tell me what Microsoft's web browser is? Edge? Anyone else have any guesses? No? Yeah, some people might have been thinking IE or maybe Internet Explorer or something like that. Edge is our new browser. It's what we've been calling it. And if you haven't heard of it yet, then you probably haven't logged into Wi-Fi. So, you know, make sure that you go see that Wi-Fi password, and that'll tell you what the browser is. So there's Microsoft Edge's logo. And I actually work on the Microsoft Edge team. I'm a program manager on the team. And here's what Edge looks like. Who here has used Edge? Just a quick show of hands. Okay, that's a pretty good amount. It looks like about 50% of you. Who here has never used Edge? All right, as expected, another half of you. Who here has never heard of Edge? Oh, okay, that's good. So you guys have all heard of Edge. Well, that makes this slide a little irrelevant, but I wanted to educate you guys. Sorry that I had to say it. This is one of these things that we say at the office and everyone thinks, oh, that was so clever. I can't believe you said that. But now it's more like, I can't believe you just said that. So if you need some education, we have the booth downstairs, or actually, I guess it's upstairs, underneath the bleachers where you're sitting. Kyle, my colleague, is manning the booth, along with Mark, who's based out of Berlin as well. So you can check that out and get some education. And so this is what the booth looks like, unmanned. So anyways, today I'm going to be giving you guys a brief history of web apps. Oh, what? Wrong emphasis there. Let me try that again. Okay. Perfect. All right, so the brief history of web apps. What is the history of web apps? Well, it all started about 20 years ago when we were pondering about the web and whatnot and thinking about what's so great about it. Well, it turns out that the web is actually a very powerful thing. And there's a lot that's great about it. The fact that it's cross-platform, the fact that it's open. You can take your web page that you're writing from one browser and you could run it in a different browser, and that was great. It came down from a server, so it was always fresh. It was something that you could give something that was very up-to-date. And of course, it was open in the sense that you could write your application or your website, and you could put it up there, anyone could access it, and there was nothing that was barring you from doing that. So back in 95, when we first released Internet Explorer into Windows, we were thinking about the web. So this is IE5, but before that, there was IE1, which didn't have such a nice logo, and I was hard-pressed to find a good logo for it. It was like a tiny little 8-bit logo, not very good. And so we were thinking about the web back then, and we realized that it was a very powerful thing. And then later on, in 99, we shipped IE5 as part of Windows, and we really took a step back and started thinking about the web as more than just the web. We started thinking about it as a platform, as a place where people could build things on. So this shift in thinking, we have the web platform, and normally we think of the browser, which is what sits on top of that, and we basically abstracted that so that it would also work for applications, so that it's more of an open area of development. So if we take Edge as an example, Microsoft Edge, and we perform some surgery on it, just crack that open there. On the bottom, that's the web platform. At the top, you see all of the goodness of the actual application. So if we do a little bit more surgery there, well, we got our standard title bar and some more surgery, put that together, Frankenstein, we got ourselves what could look like an application. So in most cases, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference if the actual application itself was something that you would consider to be an application with the right buttons and the right interface. But in this case, obviously, it's a website, so it may not look like that. So we are thinking about it in terms of what it would look like if you had web applications. And so back in IE5, we also shipped this idea of HTML applications. You can take your standard HTML page. Really, there's nothing special about it, as you can see. We also had this optional header that you could, or this optional tag you can add to your the head of your HTML, the HTA colon application, and you could define some extra properties about the application itself. And then if you saved it as a .hta, you end up with that. You end up with an application. That's what it looked like back then, and actually you can do this today on Windows 10. Same thing, save it as a .hta, and you still have an application. So to just give you an idea of how that looks like, I'm not sure how well this is going to work, because it's... here's what it would be. By the way, this is Visual Studio Code. If you've never used it before, it's a great app that you can use to code edit. So I can't really see here, but if we save this, and then all we have to do is just give it a name, like my app, and then just do the HTA extension. I'm gonna actually have to. So there's the application. All I did was save it as a .hta, nothing special there. So we've been thinking about this for quite some time, and as you can see, it's still there, and we really have that concept of the application and the browser coexisting on top of what we consider to be the web platform. All right. So there's a lot going for that, that model of an HTML application. It was quick, it was easy to do. It didn't require any new knowledge if you already were a web developer. It was secure in the sense that it was sandboxed. You weren't leaking third-party cookies or any of that. And the real thing here, though, is that there were some issues, too, with it. And what it really came down to was the fact that you had to package it up as a .hta. And so it wasn't always fresh. It wasn't coming down from the network. It was something that was stored on your computer. There was really no distribution model. You couldn't really share it. You couldn't discover it. You couldn't install it. It was sort of just a file that, if you wanted to, you could send through an email. Maybe someone would think it was a virus, but that's neither here nor there. So really, there was no distribution model. And that was a big issue. And maybe if there was a distribution model back then, it would have taken off, but not so. So as you know, as the story goes, Apple came up with the App Store. Really nothing new, but what they did was they created a centralized and trusted location where people could basically install applications. And this changed the world, and it made people think of apps in terms of apps. They were appifying the mobile platform. And obviously, soon after, we had the Windows Store, and Google Play also came to existence. So this brought in an era of new types of applications. You had one type, which was a site shortcut, and this was your cheap, quick, easy method of making an application that you could put in the store. All you had to do there was basically create an app launcher, which opened up the browser, and it took you to your website. And perhaps this was a little misleading for a lot of people. People were installing these applications and realizing that it was just opening up browsers, and it was kind of a waste of space on your home screen. So people ended up just discarding those apps, and they weren't that great. There's another kind of application which built on top of Cordova or PhoneGap, if you've heard of those. And what that aimed to do was it tried to bridge the gap of the platform discrepancies between Windows or Android or iOS, And it made it easy for you to take your existing skill set of web development and just put that on there and basically package it up and put it on a store so that you could write once and you could deploy many times. And then there was this other class of apps which merged native application code with web views. And web views enabled people to embed web content into their native applications. And this was pretty groundbreaking as well, because then you could have best of both worlds. You can maybe create your user interface using the web, and then create all the application logic in C++, for example. And there were many hashes of this over time. Adobe Air, if you guys remember that, those were the good old days. There's the Chrome packaged apps, Chromium, embedded framework. There are a bunch of hashes of this, but at the end of the day, they all had one common thing, and it was that they were packaged apps. So this was a problem because it kind of took away the goodness of the web, because you were putting everything that you wanted to put in into this package and then deploying it, but then you lost the sort of liveness, the freshness of the web, and all the other goodness. So what we needed to do was kind of look outside the box, or look beyond Telerand. Yes, I just said that. And look to the server again, hosted content, because that's really where the money is. Now, there's a problem with that, though. At the time, there weren't as many great APIs or even web capabilities as there are today. At the time, it kind of looked like this. You had native, which had a bunch of capabilities, and you had the web, which did a bunch of great stuff, but it didn't really cater to the app developer. So we, as well as other browser vendors and other contributors around the world, took to the W3C. If you've never heard of them, it's the World Wide Web Consortium, and they work to standardize APIs so that it makes browsers interoperable, so that if you write your code in to work in Chrome, and Edge, Microsoft Edge has implemented the same APIs because they're doing a standards-based implementation, it would also work on Edge, it would also work on Firefox, Safari, etc. And so we all took to there, and we started defining a whole bunch of new capabilities so that we can help close this gap. And we came up with a bunch. Here's a subset of those. I don't expect you to actually read all of these, but at the bottom left, one to note, the web manifest. This allowed for us to create a way to have something that would broadcast your site as an application and say some metadata about that site. So we ended up going from this to this. And we really helped bridge the gap there. And the web had become more powerful now. You could do a lot more than what you could have done before. In fact, on the Windows Store today, we have quite a few examples of applications that are completely hosted on their server, and they're packaged in this type of application called a hosted web application, or an HWA. And what it is basically an AppX package, which has a pointer to your site's URL, and it will load it in as if it was an actual application. So this was pretty groundbreaking, because you didn't have to create a whole separate app. If your site was already built as an app, you could just use this and it would be seamless. So that brings us to today, which is the evolution of all of that, the PWA. Now, you might have heard about PWAs at today's morning talk. I'm going to give you some more context on that. So the best way to do this probably is to talk about what those different parts of what the PWA acronym stands for. So we're going to start with progressive. And we all know what progressive means. It's basically we want to build things in gradual steps and make sure that it continues to work even for the steps before. You may have heard this in some way called progressive enhancement, and that's sort of the context that it is here. Then we have the web. I hope I don't have to define this to anybody here, but just for kicks, it's short for the World Wide Web. And then there's an app, which is a self-contained package that you can install on your mobile or any other kind of device. Putting that all together, we get the Progressive Web App, which is a new software development methodology where we try to make things progressive, and we try to make it so that it works on all the wide range of devices. So, what did we learn here? Well, actually, besides the fact that I probably shouldn't be trusted with writing dictionaries, that was not in alphabetical order, we actually learned nothing new. It's kind of something that we've already been doing since day one. We've been creating progressive websites, progressive web applications. We've been using feature detection. We've been making responsive designs since day one. So PWAs are not really a new thing. It's not a new type of application. It's not a new category, more so than it is a movement, something that has a bunch of principles that are attached to it. And here are what those PWA principles are. And we're going to walk through them. So first, progressive. That means to make it work for every user, regardless of what kind of device that they're using, what kind of form factor they're using. It needs to feel like it's an app. You want it to have the right controls, the right navigation, the right flows, so that it feels more like an application. You want it to be responsive and adaptive, so whatever form factor, whatever screen size the user is using, it will adapt to that, whether it's mobile, desktop, or even what's next, whatever type of device comes next. You want a way for developers or users to be able to keep their applications in a way where they can pin them to their home screen, for example. And we kind of have this method right now with hosted web apps in the Windows model. Again, you can point it to a site, and then there's the store that you can install it from. You want it to be always up to date, following from the model of the web. You want it to be linkable. You want to have that URL that you could actually give to someone else and share it without having to actually install what it is that you're trying to get. You want it to be secure using HTTPS, and that will help with man-in-the-middle attacks so that you know that you're getting the trusted content that you expected. And you want it to be discoverable. And I talked a little bit about the web app manifest before. That helps broadcast the information that you need, telling you that that site has some data, some application information about it. But then there's the two at the bottom, re-engagement and network independence. And these are sort of new because we hadn't really thought about those before. And quite frankly, in the native world, they deal pretty well with this because they're always built to be offline first. So if you have a low quality connection or even a flaky connection or anything like that, you're pretty much out of luck on a web application. But native application uses the network or an internet connection to be an enhancement to that. In the same way, if you wanted to re-engage your users in a native application, you just have to show them a toast, and then from that toast, they would click that and they would reopen the application. So they had these advantages there that web applications really didn't. So if we look back on the features that we had been working on at the W3C, there's probably nothing here that would help us with that. So we had to create something new. And from that, we created the service worker. And you had heard about this the morning talk a little bit briefly. I'm going to go into some more detail here. So before even the service worker, which I'm going to describe what it is, we had to look even lower level. We had to figure out how we can take a pages request, which is making a bunch of calls to all of these types of information, whether it's your actual HTML, your CSS, your JavaScript, video, images, whatever it may be, and abstract that in some way so that we can say, whenever a call is made to one of these resources, we wanted to spin up this thing called a service worker. So we created this idea of fetch, of the fetch layer, and that's what we see today. So when you have the simple case of a page that you're trying to make a call to a server, in the simple case, the request goes out, response comes back. It's pretty slow in some cases, especially on mobile. But if you have a service worker, it's a lot snappier because you can serve up one of your cache resources with your managed cache and have that experience be a lot more quick and reliable. So it opened up a whole bunch of possibilities in that sense, because now you can act as the network when the network wasn't really there. So what does this look like in context? So Google actually had the Google I/O PWA that they did some research on, and they tried to get some metrics about this. On the first page load of their PWA without a service worker, because you don't get that service worker the first page load, as we learned from this morning's talk. There were some pretty high numbers for how long it took to load, especially mobile. It took quite a bit longer. And then on the second page load, when you have the browser's cache or the HTTP cache, you saw that there were lower numbers. It was a lot faster. And this was without service worker. So if we put the service worker in there and we take out the network completely, we are now looking at even lower numbers. So in context, we're doing a lot better with the service worker than without one, and even better than without the HTTP cache. So you get a better average load time here. And that's key for a lot of developers, a lot of applications which depend on being able to load their apps fast. So that covers network independence. Now we got to look at the re-engageability. So how does that look like? Well, from the server, we can make a push to the client, and from the client, the service worker spins up. That's already been installed. And from the service worker, you can show a notification, a toast. And when that toast is clicked, you can bring back open the page or even the application, and you've re-engaged the user, which is a key scenario that the native apps have had for a very long time. So you're probably wondering, this all looks all well and good. How does this support for service worker look like across the board? So basically, we have Chrome, Firefox, Opera, Samsung Internet, which is the browser on Samsung devices, and those are already out there. They've implemented service worker. It's in their stable builds that you can use today. And then you're probably wondering about Microsoft Edge. How are we doing? We actually have started and we're working on this. And in fact, we're going to wire in our developer from Seattle and see how he's doing there. So let's do that. Hey, Steve. So here's Steve, our dev life, working around the clock. Steve, can you hear me? Steve. I guess he can't. Okay. Well, we'll check it back with them later. So we've come back full circle. We're re-engageable and we're network independent. Great. So these PWA principles, they build on top of the web practices that we've had and created some new features that we can also take advantage of, which is really great. And we end up with being able to create applications on the web without compromise so that they can have all of those capabilities that native have had for so long. And this is the Flipkart PWA that you may have seen earlier today. You can go to flipkart.com. It's an Indian-based e-commerce site. You can think of Amazon I'm not sure if you guys have heard of that, but it's a very big e-commerce site in the US as well. So they built a PWA where you can go on the site and it's a lot faster now because they use Service Worker, and they also have a web application manifest so that it declares itself as an application. So Google has said that there's about 3,000 of these full PWAs, which means that they have a service worker and a web app manifest defined. And this is what they were looking at in terms of their preliminary data. So at Microsoft, we were looking at how we can really push the boundaries on this progressive web application movement. And we thought back about the list of the PWA principles, and we thought, let's distill it. Let's see what we can do here, how we could make our pivot on this. And really, it comes down to being installable and discoverable. We talked a little bit about how we had this whole hosted web application thing that you could do inside of the store, which is creating that AppX and then have it point to a site. Well, that's great, but how can we take advantage of that? How can we make that so that we can get that whole app store effect of having a fully centralized and trusted place where applications can live? And what this would mean, in essence, in case it wasn't already clear, is that you get a real identity on the store, which comes with it the ability to have reviews and comments and all that other good stuff. It's installable, you can uninstall it. And you get that sandboxed environment where you, again, third-party cookies and whatnot, and you get higher privileges. So in the case of the website, where it might have a cap on how much storage it can use for something like IndexedDB, which is a storage technology API on the web, if if you are on the web, you have a limit to that. Obviously, Chrome has their limits, Microsoft Edge has their limits, but in this environment, you don't have a limit, the same way that a native application doesn't have a limit. So if someone wants to store ebooks or music or whatever it is inside of a web storage technology, then there's no limit to that, and it would be like a real web application in that sense. So we thought back about the manifest. We talked about this a little bit. It's basically just a link tag, and then you point it to the manifest file, which is just a JSON. And here's what it might look like. It tells you things like the name of the application, an icon, and maybe where, what page to start on. And after all that, you're able to figure out that that site is indeed an application. But here's the question. How do you go from knowing that that site is an application to creating apps out of it? How do you go from that to making a hosted web application? So the right thing to think about here is, how can we crawl the web? Well, we got Bing, which does this every day. It crawls the web, it collects information about all these sites, and it can even tell that a website has this manifest defined. So it found quite a few. In fact, our early data suggests that there's over 150,000 websites that are declaring themselves as web applications through a web app manifest. And that number continues to climb, and this is just sample data. But that's a lot of websites. So having said all that, what we could do here, and this is our experiment, is take all of those web app manifests that we were able to find with our crawler, with our Bing crawler, and then turn them into app access, which can then be taken into the store, and you can find them there, and you can search for them, you can install them, and you can manage them with their ratings or their reviews or anything like that. So that's sort of our experiment here. There's other ways that you can deal with this. The Chrome way right now is to add to home screen. Here's what it looks like. You go to the site, the progressive web app, as it were, and once you're there, you will get a toast at the bottom that says add to home screen, and then from there, you're able to go to your home screen, and there it is. You can open it from there. So that's another strategy as well. There's also a pin tab thing you could do, where you could do that through a context menu, and basically it would be like a shortcut to the application, so it would just open up in the browser. The main disadvantage with that, though, is you're still running in a browser, whereas with a real application, you get all the other goodness of a real application, the fact that you have identity, the fact that it lives in the store, all of that. So we see a future where whatever device, whatever form factor that you're using, your web application will load properly, it will work, and it will be great. So it doesn't matter if you're starting from a mobile device while you're on the go, or if you're at the office with your full-scale desktop computer, or even if you're on the big screen at a conference, doesn't matter, it should all work great. Or even a gaming platform like the Xbox, your web application should also work there too. And of note, the HoloLens for augmented reality experiences. Here you can see this guy is using Microsoft Edge in augmented reality. But you can imagine that your web application would load here just as well. And here's a picture of my bathroom. No, I'm just joking. This is a pretty cool thing where it's called the Magic Mirror. And if you've never heard or seen this before, you know those Hollywood movies where you got the guy in the interrogation room, and there's that mirror, and there's people behind it, they can see in, but the other person on the other side can actually see only a reflection of him or herself. Well, that's sort of what it is. And so on the other side of that mirror, if you place a black screen with white text on it, you end up with this magic mirror effect where it could tell data, where you could show data on it, and it obviously looks a lot cooler on the previous screen, but this is basically a web application, and in fact, this web application is running on a Raspberry Pi, which is a tiny device, and it's running Windows IoT, Internet of Things, Core, which also has the capability of running web applications. So it's a very cheap solution that you can actually build yourself at home, and we have the code for that on GitHub. You can follow up with me if you'd like to know more about that. So again, doesn't matter what device you're using, your web application will work and it'll be great. And that's sort of what we're thinking about here. And again, I don't mean this just on Microsoft products like Microsoft Edge. Remember, you're actually building your web applications as if you know they're going to run on any browser, and that's really the case here. It will run everywhere. Your PWA or your website doesn't have to be tied to a particular ecosystem, and that's sort of what's great about the web, and that's what's great about standards-based APIs. And I really mean everywhere. Like, you can have this running on a broad spectrum of devices, whether it's from the Apple ecosystem or Android. So what are you waiting for, guys? You know, there's a quick way right now that you can get going on this movement and get a place in this world of where we index apps and put them into the store. You can start up on this beautiful website, web manifest. So it's a .sd at the end there. And you can type in the URL of your site, and it will automatically, as it says there, as it advertises there, create your web manifest, which is a JSON file, and it will use the metadata or the meta tags of your page to figure that out. And so once it creates that, you can put that on your site, and we'll be able to take advantage of creating apps out of those. And the other thing I should mention is you got to be really truly adaptive. Here's an example of the mail application, where no matter what device, whether it's on mobile or a laptop, a tablet, or on your big device on at your desk, then it doesn't matter. It's adapting to that. So these are things that we're already doing, but it's great to also be doing that so that it could make sure that it's working on whatever device it's loading in, especially for whatever comes next, whether it's augmented reality or gaming devices, whatever it may be. And to be truly progressive means to take advantage of features when they're there, even though they might not always be, and be mindful when they're not. So if you have a virtual assistant that you can take care, that you can use, so here in this case, Cortana on the Microsoft devices, then use it. If you have specific APIs that you can take advantage of, use them, but be mindful that you may not always have them. So progressive enhancement is the key here. And you may have seen this article, Application Cache is a Douchebag. I think that'll make a great soundbite. So what that will, this is one of those things that, although it's not that great of a technology, and it's caused a lot of grief for a lot of web developers, it's one of those things that, even though it's not working, the new browsers are not implementing it as well with like Service Worker and whatnot, you may still want to use it just because you want to be truly progressive and you want to make sure that those applications or those sites that you're building are still working on the older browsers. Speaking of which, let's check back in with Steve and see how he's going with Service Worker. Steve? I don't think this is working. I think it might be the Wi-Fi. All right, let's stop bugging him. Okay, so if you want to reach out to us, feel free at msedgedev. I highly recommend it. We tweet every day and we get tweets back. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to take them right now, or you can ask me in the hall later on. Thanks, guys.